Freedom Guns is your local gun store for the Rockledge Cocoa area in Brevard County, Florida. Stop in and meet Mike and the gang and see the great deals they have on long guns, handguns, accessories, ammunition, AR build kits, and Liberty safes that come with free delivery and installation. They're located at 1255 Florida Avenue, just north of Rockledge High School. For more information, check them out at freedom-guns.com. Tell them you heard about them on the Shooting Straight Radio podcast.
The Shooting Straight Radio podcast is proudly sponsored in part by The Gun Sight in Merritt Island, with a 9-lane, 25-yard indoor shooting range, handgun and machine gun rentals, a fully stocked gun store with plenty of long guns, handguns, ammunition, and accessories to choose from. They're your one-stop shop in Merritt Island for all things necessary to responsibly exercise your Second Amendment right. Check them out at gunsightrange.com or stop by in person at 125 South Banana River Drive. And make sure you tell them that you heard about the Gun Sight on the Shooting Straight Radio podcast.
Well, that's right. You heard the man. He said it twice. Let's go. We are locked and loaded on the Shooting Straight Radio podcast. This is the program all about firearms with a heavy emphasis on the Second Amendment. And I am Royce, your host. Yep, I'm still reeking of gunshot residue, toxic masculinity, and a faint yet wildly tantalizing whiff of the cologne of my people. Hops number 9. You know it, baby. Don't forget to check out my friends at Ear Care of Melbourne if you're having hearing issues like your humble host here. Ask about the ReSound hearing aids. I can actually program my hearing to my setting. It's incredible stuff. Great technology. Tell Glenn Oberbeck and the crew out there at Ear Care of Melbourne that Royce Bartlett sent you. All right, if you are no stranger to the Shooting Straight Radio podcast, you are very familiar with a name that I have had the honor of having on this program multiple times. His parents actually managed to escape Cuba, and he is a very staunch Second Amendment advocate for us in Tallahassee. He is the Florida Director of Gun Owners of America, and by now you probably know who I'm talking about, and that will be none other than Mr. Luis Valdez. Luis, welcome to the program, as always, my friend.
Well, thank you, and it's a pleasure, and it's an honor to be on your show, my friend, and thank you for being a shining beacon of liberty in these dark and troubled times, because I'm just one guy in Tallahassee. You command an army with your over-the-airwaves, so thank you
for
hopefully
I'm recruiting them all to GOA, because you guys are the no-nonsense lobby up there in not just our state here in Tallahassee, but y'all have representatives in all 50 states, right?
We have in key battleground states, we have state directors, and then we have regional directors that cover a couple of different areas, larger areas. So like Georgia and Alabama, they're under our Southeast regional director.
Okay. because I've had the honor of having Larry Prout on years ago when I first started this program on WMMB and iHeartRadio. And now let me get myself a little gain here. All right, I look better on the graph now. Larry was on several times, and man, that guy was just one of the most humble but knowledgeable people I've ever met. His son Eric now seems to be running things mostly, and I've had him on the program a couple of times. But I'm glad we got our very own GOA Florida boy right here, right now. Most of y'all have heard me call Luis Valdez the constitutional Cuban, because, and that is a respectfully given nickname, Luis. I hope you know that.
And I every time I hear it, it makes me smile with joy. So thank you. Thank you. It's I'm proud of my heritage, and I'm proud of the that, you know, I took an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution. I did that as a cadet in the Civil War Patrol. I did that when I enlisted into the Army, and I did that as a cop. And I take those oaths seriously. So I still follow those oaths. And that's my goal, is to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Yes, sir. Well, especially because, did I say it right when I said your parents escaped Cuba?
Yep, my parents escaped communist Cuba in 1961. My father was 8 years old. My mother was 4 years old. My grandparents, of course, fled with the family. They came here with basically nothing on their backs. My father, one of the stories that he told me that he remembers is, I'm paraphrasing it, but basically it was a fishbowl. He remembers that there was a glass partition in the airport for entries and departures. Wow. And he remembers leaving that you had Castro's goons in olive drab uniforms, basically going through all of the luggage and taking everything of value. And pretty much the only thing my family came to the U.S. with was the Cuban passports, the clothing on their back, and a photo album for the most part. There was nothing of value. They weren't able to, you know, wire their funds out. They weren't able to sell their property or their car or anything like that. And no, it was basically with the skin of their teeth that they got out when there was still commercial flights leaving Havana. And shortly after those flights ended, because my family came in May of 61. And for your listeners that don't know, in April of 61, that was the Bay of Pigs invasion. So right after that is when U.S.-Cuban relations really started to crash. And it was the island went on lockdown.
I tell you, man, you're still getting horror stories that you've recounted here on this program, a false amnesty for people to turn into guns they missed the first time around. And now those people are being snatched out of their homes and off the streets and everything else simply because they had the audacity to defy the state and own a weapon. And it made the state feel threatened. I think that's what's going on here. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. The DGI, the Director of General Intelligence, or as they're commonly known, the Black Berets, they snatch people off the streets, and some of those people that are snatched, they're never seen again, and they go into an unmarked grave.
People don't understand, Luis. I think they don't understand that is on its way to happening here. They're already tipping their hand and pulling the mask up a little bit in some of the things they're doing to President Trump and others. And bringing the full weight of the government down on people for simply praying in front of an abortion clinic. You know, it's we're headed that way ourselves. And I think I've said this before. I know I've said it before, and I'll be saying it yet again. We are the first and last line of defense in maintaining freedom in this country and upholding the Constitution. We, the armed citizens of the United States, people don't understand that. You have a different perspective because your parents lived through that, and man, I'm grateful to live in still yet a free country. So glad to have you aboard, brother.
Well, thank you. It's always an honor and a pleasure. And look, you have an element within the United States that wants to create such a totalitarian regime. But in my travels across this country, my travels across our state, I could say this, that there is a large swath of the American population that, you know, the myth of the silent majority in politics is constantly lambasted and said, oh, it doesn't exist. And I truly think that there's still a silent majority that exists in this country that will not allow totalitarianism take hold. And even in places like look, New York, California, now what's going on in Colorado with their push in Illinois. I see and I hear from Americans left and right of the political spectrum basically telling their political leaders in their state capitals of, yeah, we're not going to abide by that. Good luck. Go send your goons out here. Ain't nothing going to happen. We ain't going to abide by it. And that's the American spirit. The American spirit isn't just actively resisting. It's also passive resistance. And our government is built off the idea of consent by the governor. When the governed give no consent, the government has no power. Ultimately, we hold the power, and that's what the founding fathers envisioned. They envisioned that it is a government of we the people. We give the consent to those in our state capitals and our town halls and in Washington. And if we withdraw that consent, government is illegitimate. Yes,
that's exactly right. And us being armed is the last line. And they know that they're not about to try to enforce any of this stuff because we're armed. And if we say we're not going to abide by it, well, like you said, not much they can do about it. So you being in Florida here, you're up at Tallahassee a lot. And man, my goodness, I really appreciate your hard work and getting permitless concealed carry in Florida. People don't understand the role you played in that, and GOA especially. And you're very instrumental in that. I love the videos you were putting out when that was all coming, going through Florida there. That was good stuff, especially catching the guy that put your threw your petitions in the trash can and caught him on video doing it. That was like, man, that's very telling. That's what they think of us. Isn't that great? But tell us, go ahead.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I'm just going to say, I'm going to ask what's going on next in Florida. And now that we're still trying to get constitutional carry, real constitutional carry, besides, I think it was Pasadomo who's trying to say, well, all these law enforcement officials I talk to don't want it. I'm like, well, you know, the free exercise of our rights is not contingent upon whether law enforcement wants us to, you know, to do so or not. So you tell us what's going on in Florida. Take it away, brother.
Well, to get where we are now, it was a long uphill battle. It was about 3 years of hard work of making permitless carry a political issue that elected officials couldn't avoid. Because that's always what they've done. They've always just, you know, pushed it to the curb. They've always swept it under the rug. It's always been like, hey, if it's not in the news, if it's not an issue, if our constituents don't complain about it, then we don't have to pass it. Well, we turned that ship around over a three-year period. We made it an issue. We made it a news story. And it was, like you said, you know, we went to the Capitol. We delivered petitions. We spoke to lawmakers. And we caught them in the act of throwing our petitions away. And guess what? It hit the news cycle. And the very following year, like, hey, yeah, we're going to pass a permitless concealed carry only bill. And it went forward. And it's a step in the right direction.
You shined the light on the cockroaches, though, Scurry, huh?
Oh, yeah. It comes down to a very simple political premise. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. If you make it an issue, they get tired of hearing of that issue and they want it resolved. And our next goal is very simple. We want full constitutional carry in Florida. And what that means is very simple. Permitless, open, and concealed carry. Florida is the only Republican state in the country that still has a ban on open carry. It's only one of five states in the country that actually have a ban on open carry. The other four states are New York, California, Connecticut, and Illinois. So that's not a great group to be in. And our governor, you know, he constantly campaigns and boasts that, you know, whatever New York and California does, Florida does the opposite. Well, Governor, look, we got you on record last year. You said you supported open carry. This past session, we got an open carry bill introduced in the legislature. It was House Bill 1619. And, you know, I like DeSantis, but he didn't keep his word. He said last year when we spoke to him that he would put political capital, he would expend political capital and use his office as a bully pulpit if legislation was introduced. Well, we got legislation introduced. We had it introduced via Representative Mike Beltran, a great constitutionalist, a great Second Amendment advocate. And in the first week of the legislative session this past January, our Republican House Speaker, Paul Renner, stood before the Capitol steps and said, I support the Second Amendment, But myself and my fellow Republicans, we don't have an appetite to debate and vote on this bill.
Why not?
Basically meaning the bill was dead on arrival and he wasn't going to advance it.
My question would be why? You don't have the stones for it? If you don't, get out of office. We put you up there to uphold and defend the Constitution. And if you don't have the cojones for that, then maybe you need to get on out of there.
Yeah. Well, what was interesting is the year before last, when we had the permitless carry bill go through, the now incoming minority, the Senate minority leader, Senator Joe Pizzo, then he was, I forget what his position was within the Senate. He was number two or the number three man within the Florida Democrat Party. During the committee meeting, he flat out said, like, look, the Republicans aren't going to push any other pro-gun bill for the next 10 years after they do this because they're going to be tired of you guys. And we took that as a cue of like, oh, really? They're going to be tired of us? Well, we're not going
to
quit.
Yeah, way to show your Achilles heel there, baby.
Yeah, it's like, we're just warming up. This is just the first act. You know, this is...
Yeah, you don't get to dictate to us when we're supposed to start and stop. We're gonna, you know, we got our own timetable here. But thanks, you know.
Yeah, I mean, look, I hate to sound incredulous, but the actuarial tables are on my side. I'm a lot younger than some of these lawmakers. I'm gonna outlast them. It's just that simple. But we've pushed our so HB 1619. It didn't get voted on. It didn't get debated on this year. But it had three simple premises. It had permitless open carry. It reduced some of the issues in terms of gun-free zones. And it brought campus carry to our university and colleges. And what's really interesting is, I believe he's your representative also, State Representative Randy Fine, just this past weekend, said that he wants to introduce a campus carry bill next session. Now, right now, he's running for state Senate. Mm-hmm. He's term limited in the House. He's running for state Senate. So that's a positive sign for Randy Fine to say, I want to introduce a campus carry bill.
He's a political animal. I've met him face to face and I had to just about shout his eardrums off to get him to quit talking over me while I was trying to talk to him. But that's another story. Go ahead. Keep going, Luis. I'm sorry.
No. But it's interesting that he said that publicly because Randy Fine has always been a good stalwart Republican. He's never been anti-gun, but he's never been at the same time, overzealous. Like, you know, he's never stepped up to the plate and said, look, I'm going to introduce this bill. I'm going to introduce that bill. But whenever legislation has reached across the ability for him to vote on it, he's always voted positively. And we've always held that.
Except
respect.
For the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Act. But him, then again, a lot of us let us down then, you know.
the list on who let us down is a lot longer than the list of who stood up against it, sadly. Yeah. But for the most part, he's been a mid to above level Republican lawmaker. You know, he's never really gone against the Second Amendment. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, that was a disaster on biblical proportions for a number of reasons to where, look, even President Trump supported that bill. That was, we could go hours on that. But for him to step up and say, I want to introduce a campus carry bill, for him to say, that says that the winds of change are coming to Florida, because never in the past would Randy Fine make such a statement. Never in the past would he say, oh, I want to introduce such a bill. He would have stayed quiet on it. So for him to say that is very telling that our efforts, our effects of making these things political issues is moving forward, because again, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. With politicians, they have two goals. They want to get into office and they want to stay in office. And for that to happen, they have to appease the loudest voting base. And in Florida, being a Republican state, a Republican supermajority, and in his district, I think it's R+7, R+8. I mean, it's a shoo-in for him to win. The real race is the primary. It's not the general. But for him to say that means that our efforts are are being heard. You know, our yelling is being heard, and they're going like, man, we really need to start placating these guys or they're going to make our lives a living hell. And that means we're working. That means we're working forward. And part of that is because of you, and part of that is because of your listeners, because, again, you and your listeners, I'm just one guy, but all of us together, and as our national motto is, e pluribus unum, out of many, one, all of us are able to yell in a loud, unified voice and say, we want our rights fully restored. So this is a positive sign. I reached out to Representative Fine's office. I said, hey, we helped draft HB 1619 this past session. We would more than be happy to help draft a campus carry bill with your office. By all means, please reach out to GLA. We're here to help. We're here to advance the cause. And his office responded back in a very polite and cordial message of, hey, come November, meaning after the elections, if he's elected into the Senate, we'll get back with you. So, you know, that's one of the things. The other things we're looking at, again, is to have another open carry bill introduced next session. And hopefully it could be Mike Beltran again. And hopefully there'll be some co-sponsors. And with new legislative leadership, maybe things go different. Maybe it actually advances in the House.
That'd be great.
Because this past session, it would be fantastic. Because this past session, even though the open carry bill didn't move forward, so you had Representative Bobby Payne this past session. He introduced legislation to repeal the under 21 bill. That was part of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. And that actually went through all the committees in the House. It passed a full House vote. But Senate President Kathleen Passidomo said it was dead on arrival in the Senate. And you also had Representative Dr. Joel Rudman out of the Panhandle. He introduced legislation that would prevent FDLE from abusing the background check system. Because as you know, working in the industry, right now, it used to be 3 days. It was a 3-day wait. And after those 3 days, if FDLE didn't come back with an approval or denial, it was a conditional approval and the firearm could be released. Well, after Parkland, they changed it to where, nope, FDLE could be pending forever and put people in limbo. So Rudman's bill would have went back to what it was pre-Parkland, which also coincides with federal law, because federal law says, hey, 3 days after that, the firearm could be released if the background agency can't get a response. So that also went through the whole House. It went through all the committees. It got a full House vote. It passed the House. And sadly, again, the Senate refused to bring it up. So there's good traction. There's movement. And I hope and I pray with a change in legislative leadership this coming year, because you got a new House Speaker and a new Senate President coming in, I think, you know, the next legislative cycle is going to be a little bit more positive, and things are going to move forward, because in the end, I would love a gargantuan victory to happen tomorrow. But as we all know with politics, it's a war of attrition. It's who could outlast who in terms of political pressure. And we're not going to quit. We're not going to give up. We're going to keep pushing, because it took over 3 years to get permitless carry done. And guess what? We're not going to stop. And as I said, I'm not being incredulous, but hey, the actuarial tables are on my side. I'm going to outlive some of these lawmakers.
Well, I tell you what, Luis, just like we're not going to stop, they're not going to stop either. And it's a shame that when these guys put their hand on the Bible and swear an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States and of the state of Florida, that they seem to forget that the minute their hand comes off the Bible. And now it's a sad that we have to be the loudest squeaky wheel. What should happen, they should be governing from a standpoint of, well, this is constitutional and this is not constitutional, and I'm going to uphold and defend the Constitution. Not, well, I'm going to get these guys off my back and go ahead and give what they want. That just smacks me in the face. It's arrogance, it's elitism, but you know what? Regardless of what that is, I'm glad for what you guys are doing up there for us. I really am, and I'm glad we're, you know, grabbing our rights back from them, and I appreciate that you guys uphold and defend the Constitution, that's for sure. Luis, if you're able to hold through the break, we'll take a brief one and come back and talk things national. You good with that? Okay, Roland, I'm going to pot you down. We'll be back in just a few minutes. And you can go get a sandwich, get something to drink, whatever you want to do, use the restroom. But you get your butt right back here in front of this radio or computer or whatever you're listening on, or your phone. And we got more Shooting Straight to go with Luis Valdez, the Cuban constitutionalist. Be right back.
The Police Hall of Fame and the United States Law Enforcement Foundation, where bold vision and hope align to create a better tomorrow for all law enforcement and the communities they serve by strong advocacy, hard and soft skills training and education, and their many programs of compassion. To learn more, please go to uslef.org or aphf.org.
Sicario's Gun Shop, buy, sell, or trade firearms. Purchase Class 3 NFA items, custom builds, gunsmithing, and cleaning. Liberty Gun Safes. Sicario's Gun Shop fully supports our military and law enforcement. Visit online at sicariosgunshop.com or in person at 5325 North Wickham Road, Suite 105 in Melbourne, Florida.
Sicario's, where you come first. For your second.
All right, that's enough water, and you've already used the restroom. Let's get it done. Get back here in front of your phone or your laptop. We've got more Shooting Straight with Luis Valdez. He is the Florida Director of Gun Owners of America, and he is a bulldog, baby. I'll tell you what, he is a very staunch constitutionalist. That's why I just love and appreciate him to death. He now lives in my home county, so now you can't escape. Luis, welcome back, brother.
Thanks, and again, it's always a pleasure for being on the show, and thanks for what you do.
Well, man, the thanks is absolutely mutual. You guys don't just work on a state level, and I'm glad you're here in Florida, that's for sure. But you guys are definitely on a national level, have been for quite some time. Let's talk about what's going on the federal level as far as their proposals for more treasonous aggression against our rights.
Well, on the federal level, there's a lot happening, and the first thing is actually on a positive note. GOA is hosting its first annual GOALS event, and GOALS stands for Gun Owners Advocacy and Leadership Summit. Mm-hmm. It's going to be at the Knoxville Convention Center on August 17th and 18th in Knoxville, Tennessee, and this is our first national event for gun owners, for GOA members, for prospective members. And it's not going to be your typical industry show that you can just come in and see products. We're going to do a lot of hands-on training to get gun owners politically involved, give them seminars, give them the knowledge, the training, the methodology in what works and what doesn't work. Because one of the key things that comes to fighting for our rights is each state is its own particular political environment. You know, what might Yes. work in Texas won't work in Florida and vice versa. But there is a core tenet of all of it that comes down to, and it's basically confrontational politics. And the summed up version of it is you thank them when lawmakers do good, and you spank lawmakers when they do bad, and you hold their feet to the fire, and you hold them accountable. Mm-hmm. So that is the very simple idea of what we will be teaching at our GOALS event. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a lot more detailed. It's going to be a lot more involved. If you want to get involved federally, if you want to get involved locally, if you want to get involved on the state level. And it's just, again, it's our first national event, and we want this to grow, and this is going to be the beginning of an educational seminar series. Along that, it's going to be fun. You're going to have vendors, you're going to have manufacturers, you're going to have people showing off their products. There's going to be a lot of cool swag being given out, cool stuff. A lot of cool and interesting people there, trust me. People that I'm going to be like, oh wow, this is cool. But it's going to be educational, and it's going to be entertaining. So again, it's GOALS. It's going to be in at the Knoxville Convention Center in Knoxville, Tennessee, 16th and 18th. You know, I'd love to see you and some of your listeners there. It'd be fantastic.
Well, if I'm able to, I will. And a couple of their phones seems to be fading a little bit, and it's not bad, but I just want to let you know. I don't know if you can do anything to maybe take a step to your left. I know you live in Palm Bay, where cell service is absolutely wretched in the western parts.
So, yeah.
Oh, but yeah, I'd love to. I just don't have the time. I tell you what, between working full time where I do work and also running a production company, producing my own podcast, but also a couple of others too for other people, I stay pretty busy, man. I'm working about 6.5 days a week, and the fight is ongoing.
Go ahead. I understand that.
Oh, I know you do.
I completely understand.
Are you going to have that information you just gave me up on the gunowners.org website?
Very much so. We have that on our main website. We also have a specific website. It's goals.gunowners.org. So goals.gunowners.org.
Good.
And I'll tell you what. We have a link on our main website too, just gunowners.org.
Yeah. I want to say this also. All of you out there, bookmark gunowners.org on your computer, on your phone, on your laptop, whatever. And hit the thing for notifications, okay? Sign up for notifications. They make it being in the fight easy. You'll get an email and say, hit this link to send your response about this issue to your representatives. And, man, I tell you what, that's the easiest system in the world to use. It's user-friendly. If I can do it, anybody can absolutely do it. So I really love the way you guys, simplify the fight for everybody.
Well, you know, the one thing that, and this comes from my own personal experience that I've learned in terms of being politically active, is that you're not born with this knowledge. It's not institutional. You don't just get a manual that says here. It took me over a decade to learn and finesse all of this experience as a private citizen. I mean, the first time I got involved in this, I had no clue what I was doing. But GOA understands that, and we really try to make it as simple as possible for the everyday layman that doesn't get actively involved traditionally in the political system, for them to be as active and as effective as possible. And that's why we have the systems we have set up with the alerts. The alert system is specifically set up to where, hey, look, we could be your eyes and ears, and we give you the tools to take action.
Well, I'll tell you what, if someone doesn't have a computer or a smartphone or whatever, but maybe has access to one, you guys post those things on there all the time. Even if they don't get an alert that there is one, they can go there and check and see if there's one, and maybe go once a week and see if the alerts are there and follow the prompts. And I'll tell you what, I love it. I really do. You guys have streamlined that thing. Awesome. So
very much so. We have our national alerts and we have our state alerts, and international alerts are very simple. It's the same as the state alert system. It's you click it, you put the required information so you could get the direct contact to the lawmaker that is being specified as the individual that could sway legislation, that could block legislation, or that could advance legislation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a great system.
Definitely.
But on the national level, other than goals and other than that, we have a couple of different things going on. We filed an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court for the Illinois assault weapons ban. We've also joined the state of Texas in their lawsuit against the Biden administration's universal background check rule.
Mm-hmm. I saw that.
There's so much going on. We also have a case filed on behalf of, if anyone watches Newsmax, you know Carl Higbee. With him and a number of other plaintiffs, they live outside of New York. But they work in New York. Newsmax's offices are in New York City. And Carl Higbee and some of the other plaintiffs, they want to get a New York concealed carry permit, even though they're not a state resident of New York. You know, just like how Florida issued non-resident permits. That's what Mr. Higbee wants. So, of course, we filed a case to challenge that, to basically say, look, just because someone lives on the other side of an imaginary line, doesn't mean when they cross that line, do their Second Amendment rights cease to exist? And that's one of the reasons why we filed for an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, of course, for the Illinois assault weapons ban, because that is crucial. How many states now have an assault weapons ban? You have Illinois, you have California, you have New York, you have New Jersey, you have Maryland, you have Washington, you have Oregon, you know, and I remember that in 2020, one of the things the gun grabbers in Florida wanted to do was to have a ballot initiative to have a constitutional amendment added for an assault weapons ban.
Right.
They didn't even want to go through the legislature. They wanted to go through that.
Yep.
So they're trying it everywhere.
Oh,
and of course, we will push to have the U.S. Supreme Court hear an assault weapons ban case. So finally, the issue can be settled once and for all. And it's not this patchwork of states trying to violate American civil rights, because that's what it comes down to. The Second Amendment is a civil right.
Absolutely. You know, back when that BAWN thing, the Ban Assault Weapons Now ballot initiative, I talked about this on my program before. I drafted a resolution of noncompliance that was adopted by the Republican National, the Republican Liberty Caucus, I'm sorry. And they hand delivered those resolutions to the state legislators. They also posted them on their website, I believe, and people were hearing from us saying, you can pass that if you want, but we're not going to comply. And it was very strongly worded, but, you know, no threats implied, of course. I wish Illinois would do something like that, and so the other, Connecticut, all the other ones out there that have these assault weapons bans. Illinois is wonderfully standing up, but I'm not sure how much of a chance they've got. I'm not sure what kind of resolve they've got. Hopefully enough to just tell Governor Prickster there to grab a hammer and head for the beach and pound sand. I don't know.
Go ahead. You know, the interesting thing is, again, talking to people in Illinois, I have some good political friends in Illinois, and they flat out told me that the compliance rate in Illinois is bare minimum, if that, and it's probably below bare minimum. I think it's in negative numbers at this point.
Yeah, I think it was like 1 or 2%.
Yeah. It's really striking that, again, Americans have this ability to just basically say, oh, you passed a law. Oh, that's so cute. Oh, I don't care. Yeah. I'm not going to comply. And, you know, I'm not talking about hardened criminals.
Right,
as a former police
not.
Officer, as a former law enforcement officer, look, I'm all for law and order. I'm all for following the law. I'm all for
me too.
For being a good, productive citizen. But here's the thing. The law in our system is supposed to be where it's malum in sed, not malum prohibitum. And it's that's a very simple legal term. Malum in sed is Latin for it's bad because it's bad. You know, we have laws against rape. We have laws against burglary. We have laws against murder because that is naturally bad. Malum prohibitum basically translates from Latin to it's bad because it's been declared bad by the authority.
Mm-hmm.
And a great example of that is, oh, well, your rifle is under 26 inches overall length and your barrel is under 16 inches. That's against the law unless you pay a $200 tax stamp.
Mm-hmm.
That's malum prohibitum. And that is things that I'm against because
yes, sir.
That doesn't solve crime. That doesn't reduce criminals. What reduces crime is putting bad guys behind bars.
Or in the ground.
And as we just saw in North Carolina, and for my brothers and sister that wear the badge, you had a U.S. Marshals task force try to apprehend a hardened criminal who's gone through the revolving door prison system and the criminal justice system multiple times, and they lost their lives. I think now it's up to 4 officers lost their lives. You had a deputy U.S. Marshal. I think 2 were on the probation task force, and I think the 4th was a Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department officer. But these 4 officers lost their lives because they were going after a scumbag that never should have been on the streets. And he was only on the streets because you have these soft on crime prosecutors and state attorney's offices that are, well, I'm not going to use my agencies and offices resources to put these people in jail. Instead, they want to go against law abiding people like you and I, or like what's going on in Illinois and Colorado to where, oh, you owned an AR-15 and 30-round mags forever. You never broke the law a day in your life. Well, we're going to make you a convicted felon tomorrow. Have a nice day. Mm-hmm. They'd rather spend their agency's resources on that than go after the dirtbags that sadly put 4 officers under the ground.
Yes. Well, not to mention that one recently, I forget the guy's name. I talked about him on the program. Killed by a hardened criminal. Worse than that, the gun he killed him with was a little cheap, you know, I don't remember the name, and I don't want to say the brand because I don't want to, you know, denigrate them. It's the killer's fault. But just shot that officer, and he died. He had a little one-year-old boy, you know, young guy, young wife, and that criminal was a hardened guy who had been turned out repeatedly by the DA, and there was the end result, dead cops. And it's holding true now, too, unfortunately.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a horrible situation, and the people that pay for all of that are good, honest citizens who are victims of these criminals, mm-hmm. and then the good, honest cops that are trying to put these scumbags back in jail, they pay for it in both of their lives being lost because they're attacked and they lose their lives in the course of their duties, or in the long-term effects of PTSD, of stress, of just the feeling of inadequacy of sitting there doing the job over and over again, going like, I've arrested this guy three times. Why is he back out on the streets? You know,
yes.
what's wrong with this? And that then devolves and makes the officers feel bad. And it's this issue spiraling out of control. And that's where law and order comes in. That's where we, the people, come in. And that's why there needs to be strong affirmative laws in place to protect our civil rights, to protect our inalienable God-given rights. And that's where we, being an armed citizenry, able to protect ourselves, because no matter how many laws on the books you have, no matter what type of draconian gun control and policies and all that you put in place, sadly, criminals will always be criminals and they will prey on people.
That's what they do.
And look, for every cop that I know out there that is trying their best to keep their community safe, we can't be everywhere at once.
No.
And in the end, you are your own first responder.
Yes, sir.
And that's what it comes down to is
yep.
You have these elected prosecutors and state attorney's offices and district attorney's offices that they'd rather go after law-abiding gun owners and disarm them. And then at the same time, tie the good cops' hands behind their back and they let hardened criminals out on the streets. And that's what the Biden administration is all about. The Biden administration, you know, with this universal background check ploy they're pulling through an executive fiat. They issued an executive order to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms saying, oh, you're going to reinterpret the background check policy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? You think criminals care? Last I checked, California, New York, they have universal background checks. Does that stop them?
No, and that tips the Biden administration's hand also. And I've said this before, Luis, a lot of people disagree with me. I've said this before, gun control in these days is not necessarily about disarming the entire citizenry, but more about disarming conservatives and constitutionalists more than anything. And I stand by that 100%, because you got all these guys, these hardened criminals, getting turned out, getting guns off the street, getting arrested, getting turned out, get another gun off the street, finally shoot a cop. All this is going on, and they're treated with kid gloves. But you got people that will pray in front of an abortion clinic or hold a sign at Jan 6th, and they're facing 12 years and 13, 14 years in prison. It's not hard to see what where their true sentiments lie, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you have these public officials practicing lawfare against a certain segment of society who they find to be a roadblock for their policies and their programs and their utopian idea of socialist grandeur, whatever the heck they stuff in their pipe and they smoke, you know, whatever it is. But in the end, they view a certain segment of society, and that is basically the hardworking, law-abiding, tax-paying family unit as a threat to what they want. And the question is, what do they want? Do they want money? No. They want power.
Yes.
And they want unlimited power. And that is scary.
Yep.
And that's, again, why they want to disarm us.
The people that want power are the people that should not have power. That's all there is to it. They have plans to use it and abuse it. And that's just the way those communists are.
Very much so.
Well, we I know we got all kinds of things coming through the federal pike, and we're looking at the ATF just totally thinking they're a legislative body now, not to mention an enforcement arm. And now they think they're badass operators because they can kick the door in of a coin collector and assassinate him in the middle of the night because he thought they were, you know, burglars. And I'm sure you're keeping up on all that, too. But those guys really need to be put out to pasture. And I don't mean that in a violent threat sort of way. I mean, they need to be, that thing needs to be shut down. We need to make a stand against them. And I'm not saying get out on the Lexington Green just yet, but they need to get some bold toned letters from about, say, 150 million American people saying, you sure you want to keep poking this bear? Because it's not going to end well for you. We greatly outnumber you no matter how many guns and stuff you got. I fear we're getting to that point, Luis.
Well, ATF, in my firm, honest opinion, should be a convenience store, not a government agency.
Absolutely.
I would love a place where I could do one-stop shopping for my alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, because nothing beats a great day of going to the range, doing some good shooting, and then ending after that shooting, putting the guns away, of having a good cigar and a good glass of a rum with me. But again, why are they a government agency? Why are they a government agency and not a store is baffling to me. But the funny thing is you have Biden, you know, he's made statements of, oh, well, we have nuclear weapons and we have F-15s and we have this and we have that. And you guys just have puny little ARs. But then Biden says that AR-15s are the most dangerous rifle out there, and 9mm will blow your lungs up. So which is it? Is an armed society completely worthless and weak, and because the federal government has nuclear weapons and fighter bombers, or is the federal government completely terrified of an armed civilian population? And I think the answer with that is look at history. I mean,
yes,
how many simple armed peasants have pushed back against invading forces?
Superpowers.
I'm not just talking about the Vietnamese and the Afghans. I'm talking about all over the world.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. And every time they say something like, "Oh, you think?" First, they say, "Well, your AR-15 is a weapon of war, and what do you need it for?" Well, in case my government waxes despotic against me, and then I can defend myself against them. Oh, you think you're going to use your little AR-15 against the government? Well, I thought you said it was a weapon of war, and so they go there. But every time Biden makes one of those threats, or Eric Swalwell, Mr. Fangfanger, makes one of those threats that we have nukes and we have this and that, I laugh quietly in Viet Cong, if you know what I mean. If you really want to go there, no superpower has ever won an insurgency war. They never have. It drags on too long and it breaks them. So if you really want to go there, whatever. I pledge my life, my fortune, and my sacred honor. And if my life ends up being lost in the process, then I'm good with that. I mean, don't threaten me with pearly gates and gold streets, huh?
Hey, the founding fathers defeated the most powerful empire at the time of the nation's founding.
Yes.
And they were, and according to the crown, they were just a couple of backwoods yahoos running around the Appalachians. So, Look, if they were able to defeat the British Empire, the strongest empire that the world has ever seen, I mean, it's kind of in our national DNA that, yeah, we're not going to roll over.
Yeah.
And and on a funny thing with the hypocrisy and the bipolarism with the gun grabbers on, you know, they call AR-15s weapons of war, and then they say they're puny little poodle shooters. They sound like the same people that dislike 40 Smith & Wesson, because I always hear, oh, 40 Smith & Wesson's too powerful. It blows up guns. It's overpressured. And it breaks wrist. And then they say, oh, it's short and weak, and it, you know, 10 millimeters more powerful anyways, and it's just a downloaded 10. They're kind of the same. I really think Joe Biden just goes on gun forums and he pushes that 40 Smith & Wesson is too powerful and short and weak at the same time. I think that's honestly what it is. Him being a gun grabber is just a cover. And in reality, he just hates 40 Smith & Wesson.
Well,
that's really what it is. That's my That's my psychological evaluation of it all.
Well, Dr. Valdez, I certainly appreciate that. As far as stopping power goes, as far as what cartridge is best for stopping power, I tell people it's the one you can put between the eyes of your opponent under stress, because a 22 between the eyes does the exact same thing as a 44 Magnum. I mean, nowhere near as spectacularly, but it gets the job done. So that's what I say about stopping power.
As the old saying goes, a 22 in the hand beats a 45 in the safe every day and twice on Sunday.
Yeah, very true, man. Well, brother, I'll tell you what, it's always a pleasure having you on. I'm going to hope that the gap between now and your next appearance is not going to be as long as the last one. I know you've been very busy and getting your house finished and moved in and running all over the country fighting for our Second Amendment rights. But if you come up for air, just shoot me a text and say, hey, man, I got a lot to talk about, and put me on the show. And you have an open invitation to invite yourself here on.
Well, thank you very much. And again, it's always a pleasure to be on your show. It's always a pleasure to be able to reach out to your listeners, because it's you and your listeners that make this fight possible. It's again, I'm just one guy in Tallahassee, and I'm just one guy here on the national stage. I work with a good group of cohorts in GOA, but it's our membership, and it's gun owners, and it's American patriots as a whole that gives us the ability to fight the good fight. And it's not just monetarily, it's also in terms of emotional and moral support. It's important for that, because I just got an email from our HR department. A new member in Illinois said, hey, I heard Lewis on the Sean Thompson show. He's a show host out of Chicago. I love the fact that GOA is fighting here in Illinois. I just want to say thank you.
That's awesome.
You know, when I get a message like that, that really resonates in me, because I mean this seriously, I'm not doing this for a job. I'm treating this as if I was an elected official. I am representing the membership. I am representing my fellow gun owner.
And the Constitution.
And they have vested in me the trust and the authority to amplify their voice. I don't speak on their behalf. Mm-hmm. I amplify their voice on their behalf.
Yes.
So it's a very serious thing. And again, thank you for letting me be on your show. And thank you to your listeners for giving us the support. And look, every penny that your listeners donate to GOA, every penny goes towards the fight. So again, thank you for that.
Amen to that. Well, I appreciate you, brother. And please say hi to Eric Pratt. I probably need to give him a call sometime just to catch up and touch base with him. But thank you again for what you do in Tallahassee, Luis. And if you wouldn't mind hanging on while I sign off, I want to chat with you just briefly before we hang up. Thanks again, brother. I appreciate you. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of the Shooting Straight Radio Podcast. Thank you, Luis Valdez. I sincerely appreciate you, Eric Pratt, and all the rest there at GOA. And stay in contact with your reps, and you can do that through GOA. If there's any kind of a federal issue on a federal gun control, you can find it there on gunowners.org. Join up now and go ahead and make a recurring donation. If all you can do is $5 a month, do it, man. Just think, if you've got a million people giving $5 a month, that's a lot of money for the fight. And as Luis said, every penny goes towards the fight. I mean, they don't put out magazines and all that stuff. I'm not putting down other Second Amendment organizations. I'm just saying these guys are, they're a SEAL Team 6 of the gun owners organizations. How about that? Because they're in the fight. They love to do it, and they do it well. Stay in contact with your reps, and always carry a loaded firearm with one in the chamber. Stay trained up. Stay in tune with your surroundings. Make sure your situational awareness is on point. And never forget, incoming rounds always have the right of way. Royce and Luis, out of here.